Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, on Wednesday, it happened again. Darn it. Was it the third or fourth time? One of these high-ranking Iranian nuclear scientists mysteriously gets knocked off. Assassinations have happened multiple times now. This one, pretty cool, actually, with motorcycle riders swooping up to his car, magnetic bombs attached, and lo and behold, a few minutes later, maybe even less than that, the car explodes and the scientist is dead. This is obviously a more covert way than the threatened Israeli airstrikes to perhaps set back the Iranian nuclear program, kind of like the viruses that we learned about not too long ago. So it's hard to know exactly what impact they're having, but these covert attacks not causing me, and I'm pretty sure not you, to shed any tears. Unfortunately, the State Department seems all worried about it, but if this is what it takes to at least delay, if not completely prevent, Iran from getting the bomb, well, I think we're okay with that.
I'd really hate to be a valet at one of the Iranian nuclear facilities, you know. Could you please bring me my car? Okay. Start, you know, very handshaking as they put the key in the ignition and turning and hoping it doesn't trigger anything. It's kind of tough to evaluate this because here's the thing. If this is secretly a U.S. program to slow down or impede or stop the Iranian nuclear program by, you know, these very dramatic assassinations, it's a regrettable fact of life that you have to kill people. It's really pershunkin' cool. However, if this is the Israelis, then this, I mean, a lot of people would say this kind of has the style of action of the Mossad and some of this stuff. Then it shows the Israel doing what we are apparently, you know, not willing to do. You look at these efforts, you look at Stuxnet, which was apparently this virus that loused up the centrifuges and the measurements of all the programs involved with all this. Somebody is doing a pretty impressive work interrupting and bedeviling the Iranian nuclear program. If it's us, and if, you know, if by some set of circumstances President Obama approved this, we would have to say, you know what, this is kind of uncharacteristically tough, direct, and ruthless of the president, so kudos to him. But because it's covert action, we don't know who's doing this. I suppose we have to say it's at least theoretically possible all these things are just mysterious accidents, one after another, that just happened to, another guy's going to slip in the shower. Another guy's going to, you know, commit suicide by shooting himself in the head several times. you know, all kinds of things that happened. One of them apparently fell out of a stadium, was run over by a truck, then a steamroller, and then the USC Trojan marching band.
nice Naked Gun reference.
Reminiscent of the Naked Gun there.
Yes.
So, on the one hand, this is really wonderful news. I think I'd feel better if there was some indication that this was U.S. policy. Of course, because we don't want to the world to know we're doing this, it has to remain secret. So either we are doing what we need to, or Israel is doing what it needs to. The question is this feels like a delaying tactic. At some point, they'll just train some other scientist. At some point, you need a more long-lasting solution. These are all very daring operations taken at great risk, and we kind of salute whoever is willing to take these risks. But just kind of a nagging feeling that at some point one of these things is going to go wrong and we will not impede the nuclear program the way we would like. And, you know, obviously each time this happens, the Iranians begin another round of saber rattling.
I think it was Rick Santorum who said in one of the debates, I don't know if we're behind this, but we should be, and I really hope we are. And that's kind of kind of where I come down on that. And it's
good job, somebody.
That's right. So there you go. On to martini number two now. And Mitt Romney is obviously the front runner in the campaign for the Republican nomination. He's won Iowa and New Hampshire convincingly. And of course, he is target number one as everybody trots down to South Carolina. And of course, that means he is going to be taking on a lot of heat in the ads. And the Bain Capital ads have not stopped. Gingrich appeared to pause for, I don't know, about a second or two and then hit the throttle full forward. But his campaign is also putting forward another ad, Jim. And this one, I think, if it's verified, could be far more damaging than the food fight over Bain.
What happened after Massachusetts moderate Mitt Romney changed his position from pro-abortion to pro-life? He governed pro-abortion. Romney appointed a pro-abortion judge, expanded access to abortion pills, put Planned Parenthood on a state medical board, but failed to put a pro-life group on the same board. And Romney signed government-mandated health care with taxpayer-funded abortions. Massachusetts moderate Mitt Romney. He can't be trusted.
I'm Newt Gingrich, and I approve this message.
Jim, there's a lot in there that pro-life and traditional conservatives will find objectionable if it in fact is true. I think the line about taxpayer-funded abortions in Romney care, which is the main thing that so many conservatives are squeamish about Romney in the first place, is the most devastating thing. And if in fact his policies did not change after this professed conversion to pro-life, I think it's something that could definitely hurt him. And if it's true and that he hasn't really changed in policy-wise, it should hurt him. So I think this will be very interesting how this plays out in a state like South Carolina.
That is a tough ad. And as one of those guys who has given Gingrich a great deal of grief over the attacks on Bain Capital and the ones, you know, the arguments that sound like they're coming from Occupy Wall Street, this is perfectly fair game. This is all looking at Romney's governorship of Massachusetts. And at my first glance, I haven't dug into each one of the details of those things, but I believe all those charges are true. Mitt Romney would be telling you, look, I had a conversion on this issue, and I felt differently about abortion at the end of his governorship than he did at the beginning. This should concern pro-lifers, and I think pro-lifers are concerned about it. And I think this is one of those things where you look at what Romney was saying back in 1994 when he was running against Ted Kennedy. You look back at that 2002 campaign. The man did not sound like a conservative by any stretch of the imagination. And I think probably the one that probably sticks in my craw the most is when, you know, Kennedy calls him a Reagan-Bush guy. And he says, look, I wasn't part of Reagan-Bush. I was an independent during Reagan-Bush. Does this mean you cannot nominate Mitt Romney? You know, people do change. People do have, you know, genuine conversions of their heart and their views on these issues. And Mitt Romney of today seems like a much more conservative guy than the man of the mid-90s or the early part of the last decade. Having said that, there's always going to be that nagging doubt about Mitt Romney. And if somebody says that's a very big concern for them in this upcoming primary, you know, I can completely respect that. I would note that very few of these guys have perfect records in terms of conservatism, and so it's not a matter of pick the guy who you think is great. It's, you know, pick the guy who wanted to do a version of the DREAM Act for illegal immigrants in Texas. Pick the guy who sat on the couch with Nancy Pelosi talking about global warming. Or pick the guy who endorsed Arlen Specter over Pat Toomey and who ran ads talking about how much he enjoys working with Barbara Boxer. You know, that'd be Santorum. So each one of these guys has something that deviated from orthodox conservatism. Every conservative's got to look at these options and say which one is the worst. I think in light of what I thought was a very unfair attack from Gingrich, I think this ad is a very fair attack from Gingrich. We're calling it the bad martini, but I think in a way I'd almost want to say, you know, I will raise this bad martini to you, Newt. Hitting the bullseye with this one, and I think making one that is completely in bounds.
Yeah, absolutely right. Bad martini because we've just learned, at least a lot of us have, some potentially bad news about a guy who seems to be on a fast track to the nomination. And I think, Jim, that for the most part, social conservatives understand that their issues are not going to be front and center in this campaign, given where the economy is and given the huge government grab, the debt, everything else we talk about on a regular basis here. But what they do want, I think, is an assurance that on one of the core issues that the guy they're inclined to pull the lever for, certainly compared to the current president, is at least on board in a fundamental way. And after this ad, it's not really clear that that's the case. So he
let me toss out the basic, you know, the gist on Romney. First, I mean, you know, this nomination will be a leap of faith. All nominations are a leap of faith at this. And there's two things you can say. One is when Romney talks about the issue now, you have to determine whether you think he's being honest and direct and passionate and genuine and sincere in what he says. He certainly has done a lot to help other pro-life candidates in the Republican Party since his presidential ambitions surfaced. And the other thing which is worth noting is that, you know, could a President Romney really betray his base on the abortion issue? I think the consequences of that would be so severe that there'd be no second term for a President Romney. So the idea of a Republican presidential nominee or a Republican president ever really pushing policy in a pro-choice direction or pro-abortion direction is something a scenario I find hard to imagine. Perhaps some folks would probably say I'm being naive or overly optimistic about that. But I think that, you know, Mitt Romney understands the importance of this issue to the Republican base, and really to not just to Republicans up and down the kind of hierarchy of the party. That if you have a whiff of pro-choiceness about you, you know, Rudy Giuliani showed you how much that that plays in presidential politics for Republicans. So I think Romney is genuine in his conversion, but, you know, ads like this may stir up some genuine doubts.
Yeah, the discussion will happen. And if, in fact, he is the nominee, he'll have plenty of time to assure social conservatives, both in his convention speech and plenty of other ways as the months roll on. So on to the man who we definitely don't want to be the next president of the United States, or at least to continue as president of the United States, Barack Obama, continuing his hard work of running the country by attending a bunch of fundraisers, this one in Chicago. And we got a couple different bites here worth mentioning. Here's the first one about how the president once again is considering himself above all the chicanery here in Washington.
And if you want to end the cynicism and stop the game playing that passes for politics these days, and you want to send a message about what is possible, then you can't back down. Not now.
Here's where he really gets ramped up and tells folks the reason apparently the change hasn't happened is that they just haven't worked hard enough yet.
If you're ready to put on your walking shoes and get to work and knock on some doors and make some phone calls and talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors and push through all the obstacles and keep reaching for that vision that you hold in your hearts, I promise you change will come. If you're willing to work even harder in this election than you did in that last election, I promise you change will come.
And nowhere in this extended clip, Jim, was there anything specific about what change he was pursuing. You and I both know, and most of our listeners do, that the change he's pursued so far has been horrific and frightening. What we're basically hearing once again is that this is entirely about him and nothing else.
Greg, change will come if you keep me exactly where I am. Change requires the status quo. To change things, we need to not change things. That is the Obama message there. And by the way, like, you know, so, you know, end the cynicism and end the game playing that plays for passes for politics these days, the president said on his fifth fundraiser of the week. We can argue, you know, does he listen to himself? Does he realize the contradiction in this? Does he realize the paradox, et cetera? But I think what's more is that there's, you know, language like this kind of argues that, look, Barack Obama is very comfortable with who he was in 2008, and he's not that comfortable running as an incumbent. He's not running on his record. He's not running on, this is my plan for the coming. You know, it very much is, you can't, you know, go back to the Republicans. There's nothing he can say, and once I'm elected in the second term, I will be able to do X, Y, and Z, because it's not likely that the House is going to change. And so we have a Republican House, and, you know, who knows, probably an evenly divided Senate. Maybe Republicans control it, maybe Democrats control it. What we're seeing right now is what we're going to get at least two more years of until the 2014 midterms. Yay. There's your hope and change. You know, Obama doesn't realize he's the tenant of the status quo, so he's kind of just pretending that he's not. And he's pretending that it's 2008 again and that he's running against Washington. Mr. President, you are Washington. You're the president of the United States. You know, the idea that he's running against the politics as it is these days. Come on. You know, you are the politics, Mr. President. It's a big Jedi mind trick. It's a big attempt to kind of fool people that this, you know, not to believe your lying eyes. And Yuval Levin had a very good post in the corner kind of wondering if Obama realizes the corner that he's been painted into here. But I guess that's what the story this year is going to be, is, you know, does Obama get to persuade people based on this?
Jim, I have an answer to your original question. Does he listen to what he's saying? I think he listens to the sound of his own voice and is mesmerized by it. The actual words coming out of his mouth don't matter quite as much. And that's what he's pretty much relying on all the voters to do as well. So
the rhythm, not the lyrics. Gotcha.
Exactly.
The melody.
Exactly right. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.